The Arashinos treated me with great kindness during the years I lived in their home. In the daytime, I worked with them sewing parachutes. At night, I slept alongside their daughter and grandson on futons spread out on the floor of the workshop. We had so little charcoal, we burned compressed leaves for warmth, or newspapers and magazines, anything we could find. Of course, food had grown still more scarce. You can't imagine some of the things we learned to eat, such as soybean dregs, usually given to livestock, and a hideous thing called nukapan, made by frying rice bran in wheat flour. It looked like old dried leather, though I'm sure leather would probably have tasted better. Very occasionally, we had small quantities of potatoes or sweet potatoes, dried whale meat, sausage made from seals, and sometimes sardines, which we Japanese had never regarded as anything more than fertilizer. I grew so thin during these years that no one would have recognized me on the streets of Gion. Some days the Arashino's little grandson, Juntaro, cried from hunger, which is when Mr. Arashino usually decided to sell a kimono from his collection. This was what we Japanese called the onion life, peeling away a layer at a time and crying all the while. One night in the spring of 1944, after I'd been living with the Arashino family no more than 3 or 4 months, we witnessed our first air raid. The stars were so clear we could see the silhouettes of the bombers as they droned overhead, and also the shooting stars, as they seemed to us, that flew up from the earth and exploded near them. We were afraid we would hear the horrible whistling noise and watch Kyoto burst into flames all around us, and if it had, our lives would have ended right then, whether we had died or not, because Kyoto is as delicate as a moth's wing. If it had been crushed, it could never have recovered as Osaka and Tokyo and so many other cities were able to do. But the bombers passed over us, not only that night, but every night. Many evenings we watched the moon turn red from the fires in Osaka, and sometimes we saw ashes floating through the air like falling leaves, even there in Kyoto, 50 kilometers away. You can well imagine that I worried desperately about the chairman Inobu, whose company was based in Osaka, and who both had homes there as well as in Kyoto. I wondered, too, what would become of my sister, Satsu, wherever she was. I don't think I'd ever been consciously aware of it, but since the very week she'd run away, I'd carried a belief shrouded somewhere in the back of my mind that the courses of our lives would one day bring us together again. I thought perhaps she might send a letter to me in care of the Nitta Okya, or else come back to Kyoto looking for me. Then, one afternoon while I was taking little Juntaro for a walk along the river, picking out stones from the edge of the water and throwing them back in, it occurred to me that Satsu never would come back to Kyoto to find me.